Hey there, everybody. It is January the 12th, 2011, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay, broadcasting just a few hours after quite the snowstorm here in southern Vermont. But did that keep me, Ken, away from the studio? No, it did not, because we have guests to welcome. So throw down those shovels, folks, and let's get started. Our first guest, Caleb Leiske, is the executive director of an organization called Gays and Lesbians United Against Discrimination, an organization that fights for important protections in all 50 states, including the ongoing quest to ensure all schools are safe for all students. He has been involved in this work for years, and oh, did I mention he's 16 years old. Caleb, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you. Nice to be here. How's it going?
Now, I would only assume that you perhaps have a little less snow on the ground than we do here in Vermont.
Oh, yeah. It's like a nice, I believe, 80-ish degrees here.
All right, Caleb. Thanks for being on the show, and all the best to you. It's great.
Thank you. Same to you.
So tell me, let's get down to business, Caleb. How did you get this all started? Gays and Lesbians United Against Discrimination. How did this all get started?
Well, I founded the organization back in 2008 with the passage of Prop 102 and Proposition 8, both defining marriage between one man and one woman. And that's when we did about years of outreach, so all the way until 2009, on legislative focus, where we reached out to all 50 state legislators, federal and state legislators, in expressing demographics and statistics and suggested ways to deter or prevent these statistics, such as suicide, bullying, etc., by introducing legislation.
Wow.
And that happened for about a year, and then back in bringing us more current, 2010, we switched our focus more towards anti-bullying, which is a very important thing, as well as homelessness.
Wow. Now, you've been very open, and certainly it's been in the press. You yourself were the target of anti-gay bullying in your school, were you not?
Absolutely, I was. Especially my freshman year, which was back, 08, 09.
Okay. And you stepped forward and said, look, I am experiencing this, and school of mine, you need to protect me.
Yeah, that's a very brief way to put it. They actually were not very supportive, so I threatened to place a lawsuit, and I went from there.
Okay. Now, other, you know, as we've heard in the past, well, not just in the past couple months, over the past couple decades, I'm sure, at least, there are any number of teens who are experiencing bullying who don't say anything, who just suffer in silence. What prompted you to step up and say something?
Well, it's my duty. I have to. I can't really sit back and watch anybody be bullied for any reason. So it's just my thing to stand up for all.
And it created change in the school, did it not? They have since amended their bullying policy.
It sure did. Sexual orientation is now protected.
Look
now our next fight is gender identity within the Dysart School District.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, how did you find out that they were then adding this protection for sexual orientation?
This all happened, I mean, the main things transpired towards the end of the year where I took action. And during the summer, they had an urgent board meeting to say, let's protect sexual orientation, in which clearly they passed.
And did you get to go to that meeting?
I did not. It was just between the board members.
Oh, I would have stormed into that one. All right. Don't storm into meetings, Caleb. It doesn't get the job done.
I know.
Okay. Now, with this organization, how are you getting the word out about all the good work that you guys want to be doing and that you are doing?
We do a lot of media outreach.
And what has the response been thus far?
Very positive. We have a lot of youth contact, not only our organization, but sometimes one-on-one, because I like to encourage people that even have a hard day and just want to say, oh my gosh, I've been bullied, to contact me. And I think that's important for them all to know that I've been through the same circumstances. Even though I direct an organization, I'm no different.
Can I just say, I mean, you do recognize at some point that you are indeed 16.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think really motivates you? Because I'm sure you can understand that this is not what all 16-year-olds are doing. And you have found the motivation and the resources to keep this going. What do you think? What advice would you give to other 16-year-olds?
Oh, that's a hard one. Changes for everybody. But the most important thing is if you're being bullied, stand up for yourself. Don't be afraid. And if you are afraid, reach out to the organizations out there, including our own. Because we'd be more than happy to take some time to discuss it.
That's fantastic. There you go. Now talk to me about this shelter launch there in Arizona.
All right. So within the next few months, we're hoping to lease a facility out here in Tempe, Arizona,
okay,
where a lot of demographics are of youth that are homeless, as well as Phoenix population, which is our metropolitan area out here in Arizona, that also has a lot of homelessness. So we're trying to combine that in outreach to all homeless people, of course, but with our main focus on LGBT matters, which we lack out here.
Okay. Now, how do you even wrap your mind around this? Are you looking at different spaces right now that are possible? How do you start doing this?
We have two or three spaces. Now the most important thing is funding.
Yes. All right. I want to hear the clever fundraising idea. I feel like you have this very unique thing.
We have many.
Okay, tell me, because we want to support these
All
things.
All right. The main top things that we're doing, we're reaching out to city, state, and federal grants, of course, which are very critical.
Nice.
And in that process, we're also obviously accepting public donations as we become a 501c3 and nonprofit, which are tax deductible, of course. And we are also, on top of that, trying to work with organizations and corporations that support our work that would be willing to give any percentage, even, I mean, 0.2% of a daily profit.
That would be fantastic.
I mean, $5 goes a long way to a youth, so.
It goes a super long way. When would you like to see the doors of this shelter open?
Hopefully by the end of this year, if not a little bit sooner, but it's going to be more towards the end of this year, obviously, because we want to be most efficient.
Right.
We might lease the building in the beginning to the middle of the year, but obviously we're going to want to make everything within it stable and the best it can be.
Because we want a sustainable project.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, have you done outreach to homeless youth there in Tempe?
I've never done it in Tempe.
Okay.
Even when I'm not at work, I'm still helping people off the streets. I always tend to run into animals that are lost or homeless people on the streets, and I try to do my best to help everybody. So I have quite a bit of experience, and I've also worked with several food banks, and I understand those problems that occur.
Now, people, you can understand that people might be a little bit confused. They're hearing, wait, I don't understand. He's doing this incredible work, and he's 16. What does he mean when I'm not at work? Are you currently going to school? What are your plans right now?
Well, I used to be in high school,
okay.
But I am no longer in high school as of yesterday.
As of yesterday. Okay.
I'm going to complete, my days are now going to consist of full-time with GLUED, which is the organization, and then on part-time, I'm going to be going to Paradise Valley Community College out here for a degree in criminal justice.
Fantastic. Now, I am a dean of students at a college, so this is very important to me that you complete this degree and that you focus on it. Why criminal justice?
Absolutely. It's a big thing. I think law enforcement is very important. Obviously, when somebody has a gun to your head, you want to have somebody to call.
Yeah.
So I want to be one of those people that respond to that.
And how can we motivate? I'm so stuck on that. We get emails all the time at the show from teens all over the country just saying, gosh, I wish I could say something. I wish I could do something. But no one will take me seriously. I'm 15. I'm 17. I'm 16. One voice goes a long way. All right.
Sure does.
So we got to vote. We got to motivate the masses.
Absolutely.
There's quite a
very
bit of
important.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of power in the teen vote. I mean, yes, you cannot actually vote, but that doesn't mean that you can't mobilize and create pretty systemic, amazing change.
Correct. Yeah. Sometimes your voice goes longer than a vote. I can tell you that right now.
There you go. All right. Now, how supportive is your family of your efforts?
Very supportive, and every day they get more and more supportive. I try to keep them in the loop and everything, and get them involved too. So
nice. What advice are people giving you these days?
Stay in school, but stay focused.
Okay.
Of course. Yep.
You do understand that you are doing incredible work, correct?
I do, and I appreciate that.
Okay. This is good stuff. All right, so now where can folks go to learn more?
Our website's currently under construction for maybe a day or two more. But our website will have resources, ways to take action, our contact information, whether it be our personal or our desk. So if you don't feel comfortable necessarily, you know, calling our office, then you can call me. And I love to take time. If somebody's being bullied, I love to take time and talk to them about what's going on and outreach to their school. I'll give their school a call and say, hey, this is what's going on, and know that you're in this circuit within the court, and this is the ruling, and you could face legal trouble. So clean it up.
Nice. Nice. And what is the web address?
That is www.gluad.org.
Awesome. Now, I need to feel comfortable that you are also doing things to decompress, that you are also relaxing in various ways, and that you are not just on 24/7. What are you doing to relax these days?
All right, I could try to comfort you a little bit there. I try to stay around 7 days a week, but I do take time, of course. I do have a normal 16-year-old life sometimes. I go to the spa, hang out with friends, go shopping, whatever it might be.
Okay.
And soon I'll be driving around town, so.
Oh, my. What is the driving age out there in Arizona?
16.
Okay.
15 and a half for a permit and then 16 for a license. But I'm a little bit behind on the permit test.
You haven't done the permit test yet?
I actually failed it.
No, I don't want to talk about that. All right.
I know, I didn't study.
What do you feel like there's one question that you got wrong that really pushed it over the edge? Because we can work on this together on the air.
I have no idea. There are some confusing questions. They try to frame it. Like, you know, if we're in a four-lane, then and there's a bus on one side, then do both sides have to stop? And it depends on the yellow line. I know it now.
I'm not sure that I knew that, so that's okay.
See?
That's okay. Although I must admit my bias where I got my driver's license in New Jersey. You don't even take the driver's test on the road. You do it in a parking lot. So I'm not a realistic driver, so you don't worry about it.
Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
Scary.
Yeah, it's very scary.
Only imagine.
All right, so what's next? What do you feel like? Let's go with short-term goals. What do you hope to accomplish within the next couple weeks?
Within the next couple weeks, we've already reached out to every single school in the state of Arizona to tell them basically what I told you. Hey, we're in the Ninth Circuit Court, and I'd like to tell you that there are protections that stand, and you need to implement them.
Yeah.
And we'll be keeping an eye on you. So that was done in Arizona over the past few weeks, and now, the weeks to come, all the other 50 states better watch out because we're coming for them. And not only that, but every school is going to receive it, every district, every city council member, every state legislative member. They are all going to receive it, and then after that, another big goal is our shelter. So those are our two primary focuses, which is enough.
Yeah, that is enough. And the permit.
Yes, and the permit on the side note.
Okay, I just want to throw that in.
Yes.
Let's have those be
absolutely.
It's the make schools safer, it's the shelter, and the permit. I feel that they are all on the same level.
Those are my top three.
Okay, this is good.
I'm with you.
All right. So, folks, you must go check out this website to see all the cool work that Caleb is doing. You are going to be attentive to your studies even as you achieve all of these goals, correct?
Correct, I promise.
Because I will call my counterpart dean of students out there at that community college, and I will have some words if you're not attentive.
Sounds good. That's
all right.
The deal.
All right. Caleb, amazing work that you are doing. Please keep doing it, and keep us posted on all the, especially when that shelter opens. We want you back on the air to talk about it.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for having me, and everybody never give up.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Caleb.
All right. Have a great night.
All the best.
While strolling through the fields of time, there's many things to see. But nature is the greatest sight that there could ever be. The greatest of them all to me is how the world was formed and why the roses have to live. Each day among the thorns, one day among a world of thorns, a rose began to grow. It was the greatest gift of God this world will ever know. It was the will of God to show that since the world was formed, there had to be a rose to live. And I among the thorns, along the road to Jericho, a man was left to die. There like a petal from a rose, two men had passed him by. A neighbor and a friend came by and saw his lifeless form. With love he took good care of him. A rose among the thorns, one day among a world of thorns, a rose began to grow. It was the greatest gift of God this world will ever know. It was the will of God to show that since the world was formed, there had to be a rose to live. And I among the thorns.
2,000 years will soon be gone since God looked down in love. There in the town of Bethlehem a rose began to bud. It lived to bloom until one day was crushed with awful frown. And then in love from God above
was moved to higher ground. One day among a world of thorns a rose began to grow. It was the greatest gift of God this world will ever know. It was the will of God to show that since the world was formed, there had to be a rose to live. And I among the thorns, one day among a world of thorns,
a rose began to grow.
It was the greatest gift this world will ever know.
It was the will of God to show that since the world was formed,
there had to be a rose to live. And I among the thorns,
there had to be a rose to leave, and I am on the
That was Rose Among the Thorns by Mark Bishop and the Bishops, as requested by our second guest, who's going to be in just a few. So hold on tight for that. Let's cover some news while we're hanging out with you. The nation's first gay museum will be opening in San Francisco. It is in the Castro District, and it showcases a variety of items ranging from Harvey Milk's pink-framed sunglasses to manuscripts and sex toys. Apparently, it has sex toys as well. The 1,600-square-foot museum opened. It opened today, actually. Chronicles the evolution of what organizers call the liberation of the GLBT community. Very cool. Harvey Milk sunglasses displayed in the GLBT History Museum are a tribute to the late San Francisco supervisor, who was, of course, the first elected openly gay politician there in California. Very cool. On the other side of the country, and on the other side of the news, a North Carolina state representative is setting out to stop funding treatment and assistance for people with HIV or AIDS who contracted the virus, quote, by the way they live. Representative Larry Brown said this year he would also support a constitutional amendment to bar same-sex couples from marrying and would propose a bill to stop the government from helping people, quote, living in perverted lifestyles. Now, I will now get emails, as I do every time I cover one of these stories, I'll get an email at thisshowissogay@AOL.com saying, I don't understand why you cover that story. What is the point of covering that story? Why would you cover that story? It's not a happy story. No, it's not. But we also can't present a view of the news, a view of the state of LGBT equality that doesn't take into account that these are some of the folks that are in power. These are some of the folks that we have to work with if we're going to create change, or these are some of the folks that we need to perhaps oust from their political positions if we are going to create change. So we can't just cover the GLBT History Museum's opening. We can't just cover all of the states. It just made it sound like there are tons of states that are now passing gay marriage. But those, of course, we're going to cover those and we're going to celebrate them. But we also need to have a balanced representation of what's going on out there, because if you go into this work with blinders on, the disappointment and the burnout just kicks in like crazy. So it's important to know this. We need to know that Representative Larry Brown, a North Carolina state representative, is still saying in 2011, and it is indeed 2011, that people with HIV or AIDS contracted this virus, quote, by the way that they live. And that we need to not help them because, quote, they are living in perverted lifestyles. It's 2011. It's North Carolina. It's Representative Larry Brown. Now, another piece of news that you just couldn't have missed this week. Obviously, our hearts and our prayers and just all of our good energy goes out to Arizona, goes out to the victims of that horrible shooting tragedy. Just really terrible. Representative Gabrielle Giffords, who's in critical condition still, but fighting strongly. And some of the press, the gay slant to this story, one of them was that Daniel Hernandez Jr., a 20-year-old University of Arizona student and member of Tucson's Commission on Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Issues, he was working for the congresswoman and he was at this event. And when she was shot, he did quite a bit to apply potentially life-saving first aid to the lawmaker. And he is out and he is gay. Now, there were a ton of articles this week about, well, why cover that? That's so incidental. And I think when you go back and you see, well, Representative Larry Brown in North Carolina, who's a state representative, is saying that people live in perverted lifestyles. I don't know. I agree with the articles that say this is important to cover. It's important to cover that this is a member of the LGBT community for the simple fact that there are folks who think that gay people can't do things like this, like save lives and perform heroic service. So I'm all for highlighting, especially because he's comfortable with it, Daniel Hernandez Jr., a 20-year-old University of Arizona student who applied potentially life-saving first aid to Congresswoman Giffords. So all our thoughts are going out there. Now, apropos news for This Show Is So Gay, which is the name of the show that you are listening to. I'm Ken, just in case you missed the intro. A yoga studio also in North Carolina, this is like our North Carolina hour, they have apologized for repeatedly using the word gay. Look at that. It's right in the title of our show. But the difference is they used it in a disparaging way in Twitter messages and an email to notify patrons that the studio would be closed due to major snowstorms. These are some of their tweets. Quote, "Greetings. I know it sounds gay, but we are definitely less gay across the board when compared to CMS, BOA, et cetera, et cetera." I'm not really sure what that means, but I assume those are other studios. Another one said, quote, "Mainly, I am being gay. Closing completely because of some white stuff is being uber gay." Okay. Or we could just, you know, not. We could not say that. And that'd be okay, too. So that was kind of an interesting story that quite apropos. And they have since apologized. An apology has been issued to those offended. "It's unfortunate that my words were misconstrued," said the owner. And the owner later said, "I was drinking a lot of wine." I'm sorry. That's just kind of funny. Over in some education news, employees who utilize Yale University's domestic partner health benefits will have to double up on their taxes this year, because that's something that everybody wants to hear. They're going to have to double up on their taxes this year because of a payroll error related to the federal government's resistance to recognize same-sex couples. Payroll staffers at the prestigious New Haven, Connecticut University were partly confused because Connecticut recognizes gay marriage and considers even same-sex domestic partners married for tax purposes. But as we know, the federal government of ours does not. So while gay partners don't have to pay state income taxes on their Yale health benefits, they are responsible for federal taxes on them, which Yale did not take out of paychecks in 2010. To make up for it, gay employees will be asked to pay double taxes. Gosh, those are two horrible words when right next to each other. To pay double taxes this year and specifically make up for all of their 2010 health benefit taxes in the first 3 months of 2011. I am sorry to my fellow college employees right down the road there at Yale. So some of you saw and just wanted to give this about as little time as I could possibly give this, but still mention it on the air, that we did pull our show from a station called WWPM out in Illinois. And it was kind of an interesting back and forth. I had decided to pull the show after being alerted by another amazing show. If you don't know the David Pakman Show, P-A-K-M-A-N, and you just go to davidpakman.com, I'm sure it is, or I think it still redirects from midweekpolitics.com. David alerted me. David's been unbelievably helpful in just brainstorming different things to do for outreach for this show, for the show So Gay, and alerted me that this station that we're both on used quite the anti-Semitic comment, the station manager, in a Facebook post that he put out there. So reached out to him. This was after David had pulled his show, and I reached out and said, "Hey, look, you know, we're going to pull our show too, not the least of which because someone else pulled their show and your comment is still up there." So it ended up being this whole back and forth, and it was a really tough decision for me. Not because, hey, by the way, I'm Jewish, so when someone uses the word Jew in the way that he was using it, that's kind of a no-brainer. But I had this conversation. Folks who encountered me here in Brattleboro on Monday saw me kind of upset about it, just because I kept thinking, well, who does this really punish? Does it punish the show, or does it punish the station, or does me pulling our show punish the gay folks who have reached out, who reach out from across the country? Now, I don't know how many listeners we had there in Illinois, but you know, if it was even one, and I know that it was one, that's content that I would hate for them not to have. So hopefully they are tuning on over to thisshowissogay.com. You do not have to route through that station. And yeah, you gotta take a stand. You gotta say, as Caleb said, you have to take a stand. You have to use your voice when there is an injustice. You must say something, and you gotta stick by it. Otherwise, the rest of your words, they don't mean a heck of a lot. So we are going to play one more song for you, and then we're going to welcome another guest. This is a song called It's Okay. Enjoy.
Somewhere else you'd rather be.
give up on me this time.
Don't let me
leave this dream I have behind.
The future won't deny.
The words are written clear on my heart.
That every heart has a home somewhere in this world.
That is a little Jason and DeMarco for you, as requested by tonight's second guest. Hey, second guest, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, good. Let me introduce you. Reverend Harry Knox is the senior pastor at the Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church in Houston, Texas. He has previously served as the director of the Human Rights Campaign's Religion and Faith Program and was a past member of President Barack Obama's Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. He was the recipient of the 2000 Cordell Award for the Promotion of God's Diversity and Lancaster Theological Seminary's 2005 Robert V. Moss Medal for Excellence in Ministry. His work on the intersection of faith, justice, and community has raised the level of discourse across this country. Reverend Harry Knox, welcome to the show, It's So Gay.
Thank you, Ken. It's great to be with you.
Now, how much snow did you guys get today?
We got exactly as much as we wanted. We didn't get any at all. I'm pleased that you were able to get to the studio to call me.
I'm tired of shoveling, Reverend Knox. I am tired of it. First guest is from Arizona, second one's from Texas. It's great. I'm really happy for your weather, let me tell you. All right, we have so much to talk about, sir. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. Now, we're going to go back to the beginning, or not to the total beginning, but let's go back a spell. I read online that February of 1978 was an important time for you.
Wow, it was. I answered the call to ministry on Lincoln's birthday.
Wow.
Which has over the years become Freedom to Marry Day, which also became a very important part of my life when I was Evan Wolfson's first program director at Freedom to Marry before I went to HRC. So, yes, that is, you're really taking me back.
I'm taking you back.
Down memory lane.
Reverend Harry, this is your life.
Well, it was a great day, Ken, for me. In retrospect, at the time, it felt like the worst thing that had ever happened to me.
Mm.
Because I didn't know what that might mean. I knew I was gay, but hadn't dealt with any of that as an adolescent, and yet really felt a clear call to ministry and felt a resonance in my heart around the message for now. Do this on a day-to-day basis, and I'll tell you what it's going to turn out to be. And that's the kind of path that I've tried to follow with God's leading. And it's turned out that God had a script a whole lot better than anything that I could have come up with on my own. It's been a wonderful ministry thus far, and I'm really glad I said yes.
Look at that. It's good to say yes is the message.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you encountered, I was watching, and we're going to talk about the video a little bit later, I think the 17-minute video, which I watched twice, about your church being so excited to welcome you. And we're going to talk about that. But I was watching the video, and they talked about detailing how you encountered that a big turning point for you was encountering a couple, was it congregants that were gay and seeing that was possible?
Yes, they were members of my church at in the early 80s. I was the pastor of a little United Methodist charge in the South Georgia Conference, where I had grown up, and was very excited about being in ministry and was just starting out in seminary, and I served this church on the weekends. And these two fellows, who were not related to each other, were living lives as openly gay men in that community, and their families were being supportive of them in the best way they knew how, with very little vocabulary back in those days. And it really called the question for me around my own integrity in ministry. I was preaching to them on Sunday, but they were the ones who were telling the truth about their lives and living with integrity. And it really called the question for me and caused me to have to come to terms with my own sexuality and how I lived out loud about that. So they were a great gift to me. They ministered to me.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. There's some give and take.
Absolutely.
Now, you have done some work also on college campuses, have you not?
Yes, a great privilege to do that. The young people on the campuses, generally young people, always shake me up and move me from whatever I think I know. And it's always great fun to be on campuses and to have the interchanges there. I try always when I go to make them dialogical and not just a lecture on my part, as if I know enough for anybody to sit and listen to very long. And it always causes me to come away better and larger in my spirit and in my understanding.
Yeah, well, I mean, I am a dean of students at a college campus. Actually, last semester, I taught a course, Religion and Spirituality in Education. And I'm at a small liberal arts college in the Northeast, and where conversations about faith, conversations about religion, people's backs, they're put up immediately. And I'm still struck that that's the case with so many different students, that this is a topic, this is taboo. We're at a college campus. This is not something that liberal students talk about. Is that something that you've encountered as well?
Well, it is. And of course, it's the reason why churches like the one that I pastor, Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church in Houston, exist. And that is largely to offer a different model of Christianity in particular, to show people that God, as revealed through the Bible, is a God of love and justice, whose primary interest is caring relationship with us and building beloved community. And that's not what, unfortunately, most people hear in Christian churches in this country.
Right.
And so we have a lot of healing to do for those folks when we can get to them to talk things through. And our church really spends, I would say, the majority of its time helping people to heal through those kinds of experiences on the way then to becoming advocates for God's love and justice.
Now, at one point in your career, you were denied ordination. Was that something where it gave you pause? How did you motivate your way through that experience?
Well, I once heard Lena Horne talk about a time when she was denied a role for a movie that was given to a white woman who they painted with blackface, if you can imagine. And she said, "I stayed mad a while, about 12 years. And so did I. When that happened to me, I didn't have a Pollyanna sort of quick turnaround where I got to easy grace. I spent a long time being angry, and I was clinically depressed for a number of years.
Wow.
Finally got treatment for that, which was a tremendous help to me, and worked through that for a blessing. Finally came to understand that the church doesn't always speak for God as we understand the church in common terms, that whenever we do church, we should be seeking to speak for God and always listening more than talking. And what I was able to do in my own heart was to finally come to terms with the fact that my devotion was to Jesus Christ and God as revealed through Jesus Christ, not to an institution or a power structure. And when I was able to do that, I began to heal in a significant way. And ultimately, I was able to find an institution, the Metropolitan Community Churches, that matched the orientation of my belief in God, which is that God's a God of love.
Mm. You're telling me that reverends get angry.
Reverends get angry all the time, but if they act like they don't or they tell you they don't, you shouldn't believe them.
All right. It was said on this show, not by me. I'm just putting it out there. All right, so let's talk really quickly about your work at HRC, because there's so much I want to talk about in your current role. But one of my favorite projects of yours at the Human Rights Campaign was the Clergy Call for Justice and Equality. For folks who don't know about that project, tell people about that.
Yeah. One of our primary goals with the Religion and Faith Program at the Human Rights Campaign has been to amplify the voices of faith leaders around the country who were willing and able to speak out on behalf of LGBT people and the issues that affect our lives. And what we were able to do through the Clergy Call was to create a lobby day that happens every other year, so that it occurs essentially the spring after an election cycle happens.
Okay.
So that members of Congress very quickly after the election hear from clergy from back home that LGBT people matter, that God cares about us and wants justice for us and compassion for us, and that those clergy are interested in working with the members of Congress to help educate people back home about our issues, as well as to defend those members of Congress that are willing to stand with us on our issues.
That's fantastic. That's good stuff. So that's coming up this spring.
It's coming up again May 22nd through 24th. And if I have gotten that date wrong, I hope people will check out the website at www.hrc.org/religion.
Okay.
All the info's right there.
But you, sir, have a new role, do you not?
I do. I was called to be the senior pastor at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church in Houston late last year, and got to preach with my new folks the Sunday before Christmas, and began my duties in earnest the 1st of January, and we're having a wonderful time, Mike and I.
Now, let me tell you this. As I said, have you watched this video? I would watch this. If I were you, I would watch this video every morning when I wake up.
Well, it's a little overwhelming to me.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's fun to watch.
Now, I watched the video, and I got so excited, and I started thinking, oh my gosh, this is my new pastor. And then I remember two things. One, that I'm in Vermont, and two, that I'm Jewish. So it was a bit of a harsh reality to accept that, indeed, you are not going to be my new senior pastor. That is a fantastic video. I'm telling you, every morning when you wake up, I would watch it.
Well, there is a very smart man on the staff here named Mark Eggleston who made me look really good, and I'm grateful to him for it because I am really enjoying my new job. It doesn't feel like work. I get up and run to work every morning because I'm so excited about what we're doing. This congregation seeks to be the leading social justice congregation in the nation's fourth largest city. And I got that tagline in my mouth, and now they tell me that with the new census numbers, we may actually be the third largest city. So I may have to rethink my line.
Who are we going to overtake?
Chicago, apparently. Chicago and Houston vie for that third.
We could take them. We could take Chicago. We can take them. That's not a problem. Now, what is your plan for doing outreach? What is your outreach plan?
Well, this church has already had a long history of working in community partnerships on LGBTQ issues. The thing I think that's new for us is that our folks have discerned that we've got to get focused off of our our gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender navels a little bit, and to see both that we are more fully embodied than that, that we are also some of us people of color, that as women have different issues than men, we should be talking about those things, that issues of class and xenophobia affect this community in major ways. So this congregation is also going to be looking at immigration reform, access to education, and safety in the classroom, as well as poverty issues, which we do have a history of addressing already. If I didn't say issues of race, we'll be looking at those as well.
Well, one phrase that you used, and I've read quite a bit, is the phrase compassionate justice. Yeah. What to you is compassionate justice?
Well, the word justice has been hijacked by those folks who want to throw everybody in jail and throw the key away every time something goes awry. And we certainly want people, to have time to go think about how they've acted if they are making other people unsafe in the community. But I think compassionate justice is always about redemption and bringing people to healing and to a place where they can be fully a part of the community again. And justice on behalf of people who have been oppressed is about people with privilege being called by God to give up some of that privilege in order to gain a greater privilege, and that is a real sense of community and care for their neighbors that makes them both safer and ultimately wealthier and healthier than they already are. So ours is a message of hope for everybody. It's not hope for the oppressed and sorrow for the oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about God's vision that there is enough for everyone if we care for everyone.
Right. And I was also in the video that I have watched twice and you should watch every morning, the three words that came up, it sounds like, from as they polled your congregation, they're doing some nice research there at your church. That's some good stuff. The three words that came up were vibrant, growing, and transformative. And I was really struck by the word transformative because I think that that's not a word that often comes up in connection to how a church wants to be seen. But I thought it was really striking and a powerful word.
Well, it is a powerful word, and it really is indicative of what happens in this congregation. When we're at our highest and best, we are seeking to have our own lives transformed so that we model God's compassionate justice better and better every day. And in doing so, we know that we transform the world. What we are not about is telling people, if you'll just follow our way of doing things, everything will be all right, and pointing our fingers and shaking them at the world. And that's a different orientation than most congregations I know.
Yeah.
The folks here are very serious about their own spiritual development on the way to then speaking a word of witness to the larger community. And we recognize that none of us is perfect, and we all have more growth to do as we trust God more and more and in the process gain the skills and the courage that we need to be better and better.
Now, when I called you up, I made a slight joke to you about it when I called you a few minutes ago, because when you call the church, they tell you if you're having a pastoral emergency that you can call the Reverend. You are not the Reverend on call right now, right?
No, I'm not.
Okay, just checking. I don't want you to get called away, but I also, if you get called, you need to go help someone because there might be a pastoral emergency. But I would imagine that you are getting a disproportionate number of youth who are reaching out, who are really struggling.
We are, and it's one of the chief challenges that we face, because effective ministry to youth is an expensive ministry.
Hmm.
and we really want to be effective. We don't want to just pat young people on the head once a week on Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon and say we've done our job with that. So it's something that we take very seriously and are frankly wrestling with right now, how to go forward. We are trying to listen to young people to find out what it is that they think will make this church really relevant in their lives.
Mm.
And some of the things that we're hearing are that young people rely on social networking sites and e-community in ways that people who are my age, I'll be 50 in March, play at, but don't really have as a part of the core way that they communicate.
Right.
And so we've got to do better with that. We have already for a congregation, I think, a really vibrant website, but we know we want to grow in that area. We also are very concerned that youth at risk in our community are not accessing even the internet. There are a tremendous number of people on the street, literally,
wow.
In our community, who have been thrown out of their homes by their parents and who are making it the best way they can. We have a number of people in our congregation who either have been in the sex industry in the past or
mm-hmm.
currently are, because it's the only way that they can keep body and soul together in terms of making a little money.
Yeah.
And so when you come to church at Resurrection, you're going to have some serious church. We try to really get real with folks about the situations that are out there that people face, and to be in community. This is not a good time, Charlie, place all the time. Sometimes we weep with our neighbors over the struggles that they're having,
yeah.
And seek to really be in ministry with them. And we're constantly frustrated because as much as we do, the need is, always greater. So again, our real hope is that we are transforming over time, helping to transform the systems that make that suffering happen, while in the short run we're ministering to those who suffer.
And to be clear, I, as a gay Jew in Vermont, I could come to services one day, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We'd love to have you. We have pagans and Wiccans who worship with us. Our focus is a Christian one. And I am a lectionary preacher, so we talk a lot about the Bible every Sunday because I think the Bible is a liberation document.
Okay.
But for instance, we have tried to get out of the habit of saying Old Testament versus New Testament, because that's really disrespectful of your tradition, to act as if ours is somehow the new and improved version.
Right. And we're antiquated.
Exactly. So we value that part of our tradition by referring to them as the Hebrew Scriptures. And right now we're going through the servant passages in Isaiah, and that's been a powerful set of messages for us as I've been trying to preach and teach here.
Okay. Now, and I would be remiss if I did not highlight, certainly in your work in this intersection, particularly between faith and religion and sexual orientation and restorative justice, you also have encountered your fair share of criticism as well, have you not?
Oh, yes.
And what is your style in dealing with that?
Well, I seek to really stay in dialogue with my critics if it's useful to the people who are overhearing the dialogue. I try not to give people an opportunity to bash LGBTQ folks again
mm-hmm.
in that dialogue if I can help it. So, for instance, if people were to Google my name, one of the things that comes up online that I always have some angst about is a series of clips from a debate that I did with a pastor in Philadelphia now several years ago,
okay.
In which he really just is very abusive to me and also to people who are part of our community. And, you know, the reason I do those things when I do them is to be overheard by people of goodwill who are honestly wrestling with issues of faith and sexuality. It's not worth doing to really try to change his mind,
right,
or even the minds of, you know, most of his people in that congregation. I'm doing it for the 15-year-old young man who was in the crowd that night there in Philadelphia, who never took his eyes off of me all night long.
Yeah.
And begged me with his eyes to give him a good word that would get him through the time that he had to be at Mama's and Daddy's house,
yeah,
and could get out on his own and make some decisions on his own about his life. That's the reason to do it. But, you know, when you stand for justice, you're going to have critics in this world, and I don't mind having them because I think having those conversations out loud allows us to model grace.
Right.
And then also to show folks that the reason they feel sort of smarmy when they hear those things is that there really is a different model that they can follow if they'll just think about it and you know, get real with God about it in whatever way works for them.
And they also need to be a little careful, because we need to remind folks that the revelation of the day is that reverends can indeed get angry. So
yeah, one hopes that it's usually righteous anger.
Of course.
But, you know, we really do have to be careful, because as we all can make mistakes out of a place of pain and anger, reverends can do that too.
Okay.
And so we have to always be in dialogue with as many people as possible, I think, in order to get to solutions that are really just solutions that work for everybody.
Well, we have to talk about your musical selections real quick before we let you go. This is he's already chuckling. It's a good sign. This is the part of the show, Reverend Harry Knox, where you tell our listening audience what some of your musical selections say about Reverend Harry Knox. I'm only going to make you do two of these, okay?
Okay.
It's not good to surprise a reverend. I'm a little nervous about this now. The first one we played at the top of the show, what does Rose Among the Thorns say about Reverend Harry Knox?
Oh, I really am devoted to Jesus Christ.
There you go.
That song is all about how Jesus really models for us that suffering can be redemptive, and that life doesn't have to stop with the thorns. We can see a better life going forward. It's an old song, and I suspect that the bishops who sing it would probably object to my using it, but I just decide to love them and to love it in spite of the fact that we might be on opposite sides of political conversations.
They're not on the show right now, so it's fine. Don't worry about it. All right, I'm only going to make you do one more. It's the show that's going to play you out. What does Looking for a City say about Reverend Harry Knox?
Well, Vestal Goodman was a great gospel artist who's left us now to go home to that city that she was looking for many, many, many years in song. There is a hope of a better place. I am not just looking for it, I'm working for it every day. And it's not a place that we have to wait for when we die. It's a place that we can create right here on earth with God's help.
Nice. Fantastic. See, you passed that with flying colors. Now where can folks go to learn more about resurrection?
We would love for people to visit our website at www.resurrectionncc.org. And just remember, there are three auras in resurrection.
There you go. All right. Spoken like a true Southerner.
Now, thanks for having me, Ken.
No, it's just such an absolute treat. Look, I was not raised in the church. That was not my background. But just hearing you speak about your efforts and your energy and what you're putting out there and obviously what you're getting back, it really transcends different backgrounds. It transcends any sense of, well, you're in this part of the country and I'm in this part of the country and this is where you worship and this is where I worship. It's just that we're working towards a common goal, and what you are doing to push that conversation forward and to make people feel supported is just incredible.
Thank you, Ken. I really appreciate your help in getting the word out.
Well, thank you. Well, Reverend Knox, all the best in your work. You're like in Houston?
Oh, we love Houston.
I hear it's a good mayor.
A great mayor. Mayor Annise Parker is a great mayor.
That's a good thing. It's a good thing. And yeah. Someone you've met, obviously.
I have not. I have only been here since the tail end of December. And we haven't had a chance to go by and see the mayor. She, though, is a great friend of this congregation. Everybody in the congregation knows the mayor, and they love her.
Well, you need to get on it then. Let's go. We should get her to watch the 17-minute video. She'll be running over to you. Just saying.
I'll be glad to go see the mayor. She doesn't have to come to me.
Reverend Harry Knox, what an absolute pleasure having you on the show. All the best in this new position to you and your family and everybody down there in Texas. Love having you on.
Great. Thank you, Ken.
And that, folks, is really the end of our post-snowpocalypse. That's what they're calling it here. Post-snowpocalypse hour. You guys get out there. You go start doing some amazing things. It doesn't matter what age you are, as our first guest Caleb showed. It doesn't matter what religion you are. It doesn't matter what faith you espouse. What is important to you is that you get your voice out there, that you have that sense of justice, and that you put that forward, because we really all can make a difference. And that's what tonight's show and what we try every show to make it clear to everybody. You can always send us an email at thisshowisogay@aol.com. If you have ideas for guests, please send them on over. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn about upcoming guests, to learn about the hosts of this show, and also to listen to past podcasts. And finally, stroll on over to Facebook and type in "This Show Is So Gay," like us, because we sure as heck like you. Go out there, go do some amazing things. And above all else, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Here among the shadows, in a lonely land, we're a band of pilgrims on the move, burdened down with sorrows, shunned by every hand, looking for a city built above.